This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashran Johan. The unofficial results from PKRF party elections are in. While there is no change at the highest position of the party as Anwar Ibrahim ran and retained his president post uncontested, there are big changes in other leadership positions that could impact not just the political dynamics of PKR and Harapan, but also the landscape of Malaysian politics as a whole. I'm of course primarily talking about Rafizi Ramli being elected as the Deputy President of PKR. So joining me on the show today to discuss this is Dr. Oh Ay San. He's a Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Welcome to the show, Ay San.
Hi, nice to talk to all of you.
Now, before we get into the results themselves, Ay San, I'd like to get your thoughts on the elections, PKR party election as a whole. On the one hand, reports indicate that it was a bit of a mess in some areas and even a voter turnout was very low at only 13%. But on the other hand, they are a very democratic party in terms of internal elections, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. I think the Malaysian parties in general, what I would call, and I think some political scientists may call them a so-called Leninist party, right? That means, for example, you have the branches been elected, and then the branch leadership would elect the divisional leadership. Divisional leadership may elect the central leadership, and so on. And then you have a party president and the Supreme Council or Central Committee. PKR perhaps is the most, shall we say, democratically oriented among all the political parties, or at least the major ones in Malaysia, because, well, it allows these central positions to be elected by even just ordinary members, right? So this is a little bit akin to what is happening in the US, namely, like, for example, if you want to run as a candidate representing the Republican Party, first you need to be voted in a Republican primary. The party members of Republican parties will have to vote for you over other similar Republican candidates. Only then can you represent the party in a, well, in their case, in a senatorial or in a congressional seat. But in Malaysia, this is the closest that we get to a somewhat more democratic party structure. And even in the US, in primaries, you see, for example, typical voting percentage would be, let's say, 20-30%. So in Malaysia, you don't even have a primary type of a culture, political culture, to start with. So when you have, let's say, 10-15% of members who are willing to sort of sacrifice half a day to come out to vote and so on, that's already quite remarkable.
So let's talk about the results, because we start with the most exciting bit, or the one that everybody was really keeping a close eye on, and which is Rafizi Ramli versus Saifuddin Nasution. Rafizi defeated Saifuddin to become the deputy president of PKR. Now, why did Rafizi Ramli win, and what does his victory signal for PKR moving forward?
Well, there is, of course, this sort of hope for Rafizi to revitalize the party and so on. But I think it is more sort of protest votes against Anwar. Largely, the members of PKR would still keep Anwar as their president, as evidenced by him not being challenged for the presidency. But I think they also felt that there is a need to rejuvenate the party, because over the past 2 to 3 years, PKR seems to be sort of wandering in the wilderness. And if you see, for example, the last, shall we say, three state elections, in Johor, in Malacca, and in Sarawak, PKR did very badly. And Anwar, with his several rounds of claiming that he commanded the parliamentary majority, but at the end of the day, could not deliver and so on. Well, then you would leave your party members wondering, you know, what is exactly going on with this party, where is the future direction and so on. And Rafizi Ramli, with his more youthful image, and also I think his quite formidable backup of a research team, which could, you know, go into all the electoral maps and so on. I think the party members decided to give him a chance to try to at least work with Anwar to try to rejuvenate the party. Yeah,
right. And you brought up something very interesting, and that is the protest vote. Because what's intriguing when we take a closer look at the results of this PKR election, and this is something that you know, other analysts have pointed out as well, like Dr. Bridget Welsh, is that, you know, while Anwar became the president uncontested, like you said, many of his closest allies, not just Saifuddin Nasution, who lost to Rafizi, but even, let's say, Farhash, Wafa, Salvador Rizal, Mubarak, and Johari, all of these candidates lost. In fact, as Dr. Bridget Welsh points out in one of her recent columns on Between the Lines, and I quote, "There was also open resistance to decisions made by Anwar, as occurred in Alor Gajah, where the dropped candidate in the Malacca state polls, Jeannie Lim, actually won this division," end quote. Now, what does this say about Anwar's waning Anwar's popularity in PKR? And if, is, you know, there's this protest among PKR members towards Anwar and his allies, then why did no one contest for the topmost position? Why take this route of, you know, protest votes while keeping Anwar as the president?
Well, Anwar is undoubtedly the sort of founder and spiritual leader for the party, right? Mm-hmm. So within the party, he is still a larger-than-life figure. And his ambition to be the Prime Minister of Malaysia has not been, well, at least from his point of view, been exhausted. So I think the party will feel that at this point to totally sort of hand over the leadership to another person perhaps is not quite the time yet. But I think the call is indeed for Anwar to sort of, in a sense, ease out of the political scene, namely to continue to lead for a while and at the same time hopefully grooming Rafizi and so on. But frankly speaking, Anwar's record is not quite good on this score, because, well, previously there was also his very close, at that time, very close comrade Azmin Ali. And people would think that, you know, he should be grooming Azmin to take over. Mm-hmm. But, of course, instead, he took proactive measures to repress Azmin's ascendance in the party, which, well, some observers would say partially led to the instigation of the Sheraton move, right? Because right. Azmin Ali would like to come out from Anwar's shadow to be his own boss and so on. So, well, if Anwar were to really learn that lesson and work with Rafizi well, Rafizi is a very different kind of politician from Azmin. Azmin, even though also commands a lot of support, but it's more like those old-fashioned type of support, namely, you know, you are, it's like, well, to put it very bluntly, AMNO type of support. You are chummy-chummy with all the division leaders, they deliver the votes to you and so on. Whereas Rafizi, it's more like the, I don't know how to call it, but perhaps new age type of leader, mm-hmm. right? Postmodern type of leader with wide appeal directly to voters, because I think even non-PKR members would see Rafizi with his very good reputation as being somebody who could be a potential future prime minister. But it is this very reputation that may, just like with Azmin Ali, rattle Anwar. So I would say the ball is indeed in Anwar's court, and how he would like to kick it around would decide the future of PKR as a relevant political player in the Malaysian political scene. Yeah.
Now, you brought up a lot of interesting things that I want to dive into, starting with the Lanka Sheraton thing, right? Because after the previous PKR elections, there was a lot of tension. It seemed like the party was split between supporters of Rafizi and Azmin Ali, and the situation grew really toxic. And I think that's really key here. There was a lot of internal power struggles, even beyond the elections. Then the party politics became very toxic. And that was one of the reasons, that the various dynamics, between PKR were one of the reasons why Lanka Sheraton happened in the first place. What are the internal dynamics of the party this time around? Do you get the sense that it is a little bit better? Despite Rafizi's victory and Saifuddin's defeat, that they are going to come together, work together, and with their eye on the bigger picture, the bigger goal? Or do you fear that more of the same could potentially happen?
Well, I think it's like this. Number one, it is a much calmer and tamer atmosphere within the party, namely PKR, both before and after the party election. I remember last round, there were, when Rafizi was fighting, Azmin, there were even like some physical scuffles in some of the divisional meetings and so on. This time is a much calmer atmosphere. And I think that's mainly because, number one, Azmin's more vociferous supporters, they have also left the party together with Azmin, and therefore the party is largely one that is composed of mostly Anwar and other type of supporters, but no longer the more vociferous Azmin supporters. And number two, it's also Rafizi's the opponent as vice president, namely Saifuddin Nasution, who is, unlike Azmin, a much more, stable and uncontroversial figure. Saifuddin Nasution has been with the party since its very inception. You have never seen him with any sort of, I wouldn't say any sort of political ambition, but, with a lot of political ambition until this round when he's running for deputy presidency. Right. And the contest was a very civilized one, with Saifuddin not going really out there to attack Rafizi and vice versa, and even, very graciously congratulating Rafizi for Rafizi's win and so on. So on that score, it's a much calmer and tamer more cohesive party atmosphere, conducive for, really some sort of muafakat to bring the party going forward. But the elephant in the room, shall we say, remains the attitude of Anwar. If Anwar, as I said, learned the Azmin painful lesson, and thereby now, give Rafizi more or less a free hand to revamp the party and so on, then there might be some chance for rejuvenation. If Anwar focuses on repressing Rafizi's ascendance in the party, for example, by appointing those who lost in the party election to similarly important posts and so on, then I don't think Rafizi would do what Azmin did. Rafizi is simply a different type of leader, a more right. modern leader, but he would just like what he did previously, namely fade into the background again. Since you don't give me a free hand, since the party doesn't look like it needs me, well, fine, I could go back to my corporate sector. And so I don't think there will be a split like the Azmin Anwar split.
On the show with me today is Dr. O.A. San, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. After the break, we talk about Pakatan Harapan component parties and how their dynamics are going to be affected now that Rafizi Ramli has won the Deputy President post at PKR. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Dr. O.A. San, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, and we are talking about the recent PKR elections. So, A. San, I can't help but wonder, how will YB Nurul Izzah fit into this picture? Because she is undoubtedly widely, one of the most prominent and widely considered to be one of the most intelligent and compassionate and, popular politicians in Malaysia. But we know she has been sort of distancing herself from the politics side of politics since 2018, 2019. She didn't contest this PKR elections either, but she has been and is part of Rafizi Ramli's IO Malaysia campaign. And on that note, her camaraderie with Rafizi Ramli is also very public. Everybody knows she's friends with Rafizi Ramli. How do you think YB Nurul Izzah will fit into this picture now that Rafizi Ramli has indeed become Deputy President of PKR?
Well, you see, just barely, let's say, 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. Rafizi himself was in Anwar's camp, right? Anwar was openly rooting for him over Azmin, and that, some would say, led to the split between Anwar and Azmin, right? But now Rafizi is, of course, at least from Anwar's point of view, in a position to challenge Anwar, and therefore the relationship may change a little bit. As to Nurul, I think, as you mentioned, the sort of politics of politics, it's very important in the Malaysian context, mm-hmm. because, we are unlike, for example, in the US, where it's democratized to such an extent that, even the party wants to send home to represent the party to contest in a seat is not decided by the party central leadership, but decided by the party members in a primary, right? We are not there yet. So therefore, as a politician, you would need to somewhat get involved in elite politics, engage efficiently and effectively in internal power struggles and so on. Now, I think Rafizi also, to a large extent, tried to avoid all these internal power struggles. That's why he, together with Nurul, 2-3 years ago, sort of retreated to the background of politics, right? But I think what Rafizi is quite amazing, it's the fact that he could sometimes technocratize, as I would call it, this sort of power struggle. For example, traditional power struggle would be like backstabbing each other and so on, right? Whereas Rafizi would say, he would like, for example, bring this to the open. Okay, so what's the difference between me and Saifuddin Nasution? Well, he would agree with this and that policy, and I would agree with that and that policy. And, I would think my policy is better than his and so on. So if, for example, Nurul could learn this sort of technocratizing skills from Rafizi, I think the two of them as a team would indeed bring the party to higher ground.
Let's move on to Pakatan Harapan, right? How will Rafizi Ramli's victory assuming that he will have a lot of say in the party's direction moving forward, how will his victory impact the dynamics of Pakatan Harapan component parties? Because on the one hand, I think most supporters, when we look at just the voters, at least on social media, the most supporters of Pakatan Harapan wanted Rafizi Ramli to win the deputy president post in PKR. But on the other hand, you get the sense of not this huge celebration or when it comes to how other component parties of Pakatan Harapan are necessarily reacting to this, right? Because Rafizi Ramli, he is very different from Saifuddin Nasution, in the sense that Rafizi is just he has a sharp tongue. He just says what's on his mind, no filter a lot of the times. And he has dished out some very sharp criticisms, not just towards PKR, but towards Harapan component parties as well. And there's also this idea that he doesn't seem to be very interested in working with parties outside of Pakatan Harapan, including the likes of MUDA, although other Harapan component parties, let's say DAP, for example, and Amana, they are very, very, very much open to working with MUDA. How is Rafizi's victory going to shape the dynamics of Harapan component parties?
I think, in short, not much. I think it's like this. The relationship with other Pakatan Harapan parties, it's ironically or paradoxically one of the few common grounds between Anwar and Rafizi. For example, the PKR under Anwar has, during the last few state elections, insisted upon using their own party logos, right? In Johor, I remember distinctly. And to an outsider like us, it is very unseemly. I mean, the leading party within the coalition, namely Pakatan Harapan, refusing to use the coalition's logo, but instead using its own party logo, whereas the other two, I wouldn't say minor, but the other two component parties of Pakatan still dutifully use the Pakatan logo, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the allegations is, of course, that the presence of DAP or any association of DAP would dilute the votes of PKR. And surprisingly, both Anwar and Rafizi subscribe to that sort of belief. Right. So I don't think even if Rafizi were to take over, or if he works closely with Anwar and so on, this sort of, shall we say, souring relationship between PKR and other component parties of Pakatan would improve anytime soon. That's why when Rafizi won, you did not see sort of a celebratory mood among other component parties of PKR. Now, as to working with those other opposition parties, and even with Bersatu under the concept of Big Tent, right? I mean, to try to work with Bersatu, to work with this Warisan and with MUDA and so on. I think, again, the prevalent mood within PKR, and Anwar, I think, also reluctantly subscribes to this, is that they should not work with these parties. Number one, with Bersatu, of course, there are this Asmin faction within Bersatu, and therefore, I think there's just too much bad blood between PKR and Bersatu with Asmin, right? So I think that's not quite possible. With MUDA and with Warisan and so on, well, PKR prided itself, or has been priding itself, on being the most multicultural and multiracial party in Malaysia. So I guess in that sense, it doesn't see the need to sort of, when you talk about Big Ten, that means you need to yield some seats to those other parties, right? So it doesn't feel like yielding some of his seats to, let's say, Warisan or to Muda. And again, this is very paradoxically somewhat of a consensus between Anwar and Rafizi. Yeah.
Right. And so as voters, right, how do we, let's say if you are a voter on the fence or you're a voter who supports opposition parties, whether it's Harappan or others, how do you make sense of this situation? And how do you think it will develop moving forward? Or perhaps it's too early to tell, because it's one thing to say, you know, you don't want to be, you know, the Big Ten approach will not work and we shouldn't include Bersatu and Perikatan Nasional into the fray, because there is some sort of history there, right, in terms of how, you know, from their vantage point, Bersatu together with Azmin's camp and PAS and all of them, they sort of came together and they took down the Pakatan Harapan government and they formed their own government with UMNO and all of that thing. All of those people are very clear. But when it comes to the likes of Muda, Warisan, Perjuang and things like that, how does Harapan move forward if the biggest biggest party in their tent with a big voice, which is PKR, like you said, whether it's Anwar or Rafizi, they're very resistant towards the idea, then where does Muda and Warisan and all of these parties who have made it clear that they want to compete no matter what, how, for as people who, let's say if you're a member of the electorate monitoring opposition politics, how do you make sense of this?
Well, I think there are several components to this. Number one, as a voter, typically you will vote for, ideological differences aside, mm-hmm. You will vote for the most winnable candidate or party, right? For example, if you support the opposition side, perhaps you would like to vote for the opposition candidate who is most likely to win that election instead of so-called wasting your vote to vote for some other opposition party which you know almost for sure could not win this election. That's why that's why a lot of politics, a lot of retail politics or popular politics in this country is to create what we in Sabah call that gust of wind, to create sort of a scenario whereby, oh, my party is invincible, is going to very likely to win the next general election and so on. And therefore, people will bang on you, the voters will bang on you as being the winnable party. So you need to create that kind of impression. And again, as I said, Rafizi Ramli, with his very significant and very scientifically oriented polling and research team, I think it's much more capable of sort of capture that kind of popular mood and preference rather than the traditional politicking, both within the party as well as at large of PKR and beyond. So that is something that is workable. And number two, of course, if you look at the latest trend, Muda may still appeal to some urban youth, but Muda going forward, it will need to strengthen itself, in terms of what are some of its policy positions and so on. Warisan, even though I'm also from Sabah, but I think after its Johor, I don't know how to call it, debacle, we're losing deposits and so on, I think it will be a really uphill struggle for Warisan to make any significant impact in the West Malaysian or Malayan political field. Yeah.
Now, what's also interesting, Ehsan, is that earlier we talked about this idea of protest vote, protesting against Anwar Ibrahim, essentially. But what's interesting is that not every single person in Rafizi Ramli's camp won. The position of youth chief, for example, was won by prominent activist and human rights defender Adam Adli. He defeated Rafizi's ally, Fahmi Zainal, who was also competing for the youth chief post. Now, Adam's victory was celebrated by many young people, especially those in the activist circle and whatnot. What does his victory tell us, and what's the significance of his victory?
Well, I think it's like this. It is a reflection of the traditionally very complex composition of PKR. You know, from the very get-go in 1998 and so on, PKR composed of those who left UMNO together with Anwar. It also consists of social activists such as Tian Chua.
Right.
It also consists of various other NGO people who felt like they want to get into politics and so on. It is a reflection of this sort of very complex composition of PKR. You would see some of those who want prominent, sometimes online, sometimes offline and so on. But I think the overall, with Rafizi winning the deputy presidency, and three of his comrades winning three out of four vice president's slots, that you know, a lot of PKR members are yearning, perhaps not exactly for change, but at least some sort of renewed direction for the party. Yeah.
So what do you think PKR wasn't doing well over the past few years that you're hoping Rafizi and other new leaders would do better?
Well, I think the macroscopically, the overall direction of the party, what makes this party so special, because as you mentioned, there are a lot of other opposition parties, both within PH and beyond, right? Mm-hmm. Why should I vote for PKR versus, let's say, as you would say, Muda or Warisan or even Bersatu, right? So there needs to be sort of a new overall clarion call for the party. But I think more importantly to me, because we are increasingly becoming a very sophisticated electoral society. Well, I don't know whether that's the right way to put it, but I mean, the fact that every single constituency, you would need very scientific methods in carefully parsing the various demographics of the constituency, how to appeal to the needs of specific voters and so on. And if you look around, only Rafizi's company, I think Invoke and so on, would be able to do so from the opposition camp. Huh?
Right.
The opposition camp is not very rich to start with. So if they have such a powerful team of researchers to help them to pinpoint support or lack thereof in various constituencies such that they can, for example, focus their political resources on some of those winnable seats and so on. And I think that would sort of bring them more electoral wins in coming years. When Rafizi, for example, makes statements such as, oh, don't pin too much hope on the next general election, we are not going to get into Putrajaya and so on, I think he said that with some substance backing him. It's not just a general observation. I think his team of people must have done some surveys and so on. And that is the kind of professional or technocratic resources which the opposition sorely needs in both its propaganda as well as its electioneering machinery. Yeah.
Right. So before we wrap this conversation up, Ehsan, you know, we know that PKR's popularity has been waning over the past couple of years. Their support base has been very disenfranchised. People, when they think of PKR, they think of a lot of people. They think of I have the numbers. They think of, you know, ego, poor strategies, things like that. And as we look at, you know, from recent election results, whether it's Melaka, it's Johor, the big problem that Harapan, PKR and Harapan as a whole, they're facing is that a lot of people, judging by the how low the voter turnout has been, it's a lot of people who voted for Harapan in 2018 are just not coming out to vote recently they're just not coming out to vote because they are like, I'm so tired of this, vote for this politician or that politician, it's in the end all the same. We have heard these type of sentiments very frequently recently. Do you think this new crop of leadership, whether it's Rafizi Ramli at the deputy president post, which is very important, or even when you look at the youth chief post, very, very important as well, Adam Adli, another popular figure that activists really, really like. Do you think this new crop of leader has revitalized the spirit of the masses? Do you get a sense of excitement from people outside of the so-called politics bubble? Do you think the general masses are excited about this development?
Well, I think they are seen as at least better than some, to put it bluntly, deadwood candidates being elected into this important party post, right? Mm-hmm. So, but of course, you know, the fact that Asmin Ali brought together with him 10 PKR leaders who, I think the day before Sheraton move, were quite respectable and so on, you know, like fighters for democracy and so on, just overnight turning like that. And I think that scared a lot of voters. Huh? Mm-hmm. And hopefully with this sort of, shall we say, the new generation of voters, you mentioned this new PKI chief and so on, and also Rafizi Ramli with his quite high reputation of being somebody integrity. Hopefully it could bring about sort of a change of heart that some of the erstwhile Pakatan or PKR supporters would still come out to vote instead of just relinquish their rights to vote here. I wouldn't say I will pin too much hope, but it's at least much better than if you keep the status quo, which unfortunately I think is going to bring the party and its coalition downhill. Yeah.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Ehsan.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Oh Ehsan. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can also check us out on podcasts. We're available on the BFM app, bfm.my, and pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.